Okay, thank you everyone for coming. Excited to begin this new series together. And the truth is, the more I worked on it, the more I realized we're seeking to do the impossible, to try to take the life of such great people and to cram it into 45 minutes is really it's a terrible crime. It's a bit of an injustice. But I think to also go through our lives without getting a taste of who some of these great Torah giants who impact our lives, whether we realize it or not, is also criminal. So for the next 43 minutes or so, we're going to try to get a sliver, a glimpse into the life of someone whose impact is still certainly felt in the world today. Someone who, again, shaped really a big part of the yeshiva world and Torah Jewry, and that is Rav Yisrael Salanter. Rav Yisrael Salanter is usually described as being the founder of the Musar movement. I want very, very bekitzer to just get a taste, really, a very brief synopsis of some of the key dates in his life, to talk about, again, one little slice of what his message really was, and then to just learn a small piece that actually has a very unique connection to Hanukkah in his most famous essay, the Igaris HaMusar, which was published in 1858. Just to give us, again, a little taste and a sense of who he was and the world in which he lived. Rav Yisrael Salanter lived from the year 1810 to 1883. Again, like I said, he's considered to be the founder of the Musar movement. The Musar movement really emerged onto the scene, if you will, in the mid-19th century. We're talking around the year 1850 is when the Musar movement really started to take off. And the Musar movement was, in some ways, a response to things that were already happening. In some ways, it was preempting that which was yet to come. And Rav Yisrael Salanter was seen in many respects, we'll see amongst his Talmidim, Rav Yisrael Salanter was seen as the founder of that movement. The one who really recognized that something needs to change. That something's not right in the Jewish world. Now, keep in mind that sort of the parallel movement that preceded it by a short period of time was the emergence of Hasidus. There's no question that in terms of its reach, Hasidus had, and maybe in some sense still has, a broader appeal and a broader reach. But there's no question that Hasidus and Musar, albeit nuanced in their differences, maybe even more than nuanced in their differences, but they were seeking to achieve essentially the same goal. We'll talk a little bit about what that goal is. But just again, a sketch of Rav Yisrael Salanter. Again, he was born in 1810. Rav Yisrael Salanter was not from Salant, and his last name was not Salanter. Rav Yisrael Salanter's last name was Lipkin. Rav Yisrael Salanter ended up spending 15 years learning in yeshiva in Salant. Salant was a large location in Lithuania. He learned by Tzvi Hirsch Broida for 15 years. And even though maybe he was his primary Rebbe in a classic sense, but there was a personality that he encountered in Salant, someone by the name of Rav Zundel of Salant, who was probably the most profound impact in his life. Rav Yisrael Salanter said that my Rebbe Rav Zundel was really the one who taught me that it's possible for a human being to stand in this world with his feet planted firmly on the ground and to have his head, so to speak, in the heavens above. Paraphrasing, of course, that image of Yaakov by the dream where the ladder was firmly planted below, reaching towards the heavens. And he learned so much both in terms of his hashkafa, in terms of his general outlook, and in terms of his midos from Rav Zundel of Salant. Rav Zundel Salant, his sefer of choice was the Mesilas Yesharim. We talk about the Musar movement. What were they studying? What were they learning? Right, the writings of the Ramchal were certainly first and foremost in the eyes of Rav Yisrael Salanter. And Rav Yisrael Salanter spent much money and much time trying to disseminate some of these great works of Jewish philosophy and early works of Musar. But Rav Zundel Salant taught him that it's possible for a person, again, to be very human on the one hand, and to be striving for very lofty heights at the same time. That became his mentor, his leader in this world. Rav Zundel Salant had never held a rabbinic post. He was not a person who held any type of official position. And if you read through some of the recorded biographies of Rav Yisrael Salanter was fiercely against holding a rabbinic position. He said about himself, he said, I could offer tens of reasons, and he was a genius, we'll see in a moment. Rav Yisrael Salanter said, I could offer tens of very compelling reasons why it's totally inappropriate for me to take a rabbinic position. And Rav Yisrael Salanter, while he had a yeshiva, he never held an official rabbinic post. He felt he was unworthy of such a thing. And that was certainly something that he received from, again, Rav Zundel of Salant, who he looked up to so much. That even at the end of his life, after all of his accomplishments, Rav Yisrael Salanter said, that after everything I've achieved, I haven't even reached the ankles of my mentor, Rav Zundel of Salat. In 1840, Rav Yisrael moved to Vilna, and he began around that time, in 1840, really by 1845, he started to really disseminate his message. And how did he do that? He had a four-step plan. First and foremost, to print Musar Svarim. People need to have access to the texts that were so compelling to him in order to be able to transform their lives. Second of all, Rav Yisrael Salanter wanted that individuals should spend time speaking on Musar topics in various shuls, in various Batei Medrash. Rav Yisrael Salanter set out a plan, what today I guess we would call the modern, you know, Chabad house. Rav Yisrael Salanter had Musar houses, places where people could come and work on themselves, to spend time in an environment where the makum, the space itself, was dedicated to developing one's ethical personality. And lastly, Rav Yisrael Salanter began to gather, and we'll see in 1851 he opened such a yeshiva, where he started to gather a select group of individuals who were going to be committed to the ideals of spreading Musar. Again, much of what was happening in the world of Hasidus in its own way was happening in the world of Musar in its way. And it certainly began to spread. Again, by the mid-19th century, by 1851, Rav Yisrael Salanter was head of his own yeshiva. And if you just take a look at the Talmidim of Rav Yisrael Salanter, it's a who's who of what became of the yeshiva world afterwards. Everyone from Rav Yitzchak Blaser, Rav Naftali Amsterdam, Rav Simcha Zisel, who became the Alter of Kelm, Rav Eliezer Gordon, who was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Telz, right, Rav Yaakov Yosef, who became the chief rabbi in America, a very tragic story, the appointment of the chief rabbi of New York in 1888, and all of the bizyonos that he faced at that time. But Rav Yisrael Salanter, again, his Talmidim, all became branches of some of the most well-respected Lithuanian yeshivos of its day in the years to come. Like I said, in 1858, he published his arguably most famous work, which we'll learn a little bit from tonight, the Igaras HaMusar. He was 48 years old at the time. And the Musar yeshivas in Lithuania started to take hold. And again, some of the names that we know to this day, yeshivas that carry the names of these little places, which would be nothing other than a drop on a map, if not for the yeshivas that emerge from these places, like Telz and Slobodka, and Radin and Mir, and Kelm and the Vardik, and Kletsk and Slutsk, and all of these places, these were all byproducts of the Musar movement. Like any good movement, like any revolution, there's going to be opposition. And Rav Yisrael Salanter faced opposition from within and from without. There was certainly a pushback from the Maskilim, who were looking to try to use Rav Yisrael Salanter as a poster child of a more modern, open, worldly type of person, an enlightened Jew. And of course, from within the classic yeshiva world, they thought that Rav Yisrael Salanter's new approach to developing man was a step away and a watering down of the intense curriculum of studying Gemara and Halacha and the things that were studied in yeshivas in those times. But as Rabbi Wein points out in one of his svarim, obviously the opposition that emerges against any revolution is what allows the revolution to emerge in the proper way. And the pushback allowed the Musar movement to develop itself in a way that would be lasting. And in that sense, I'm sure we can look back and say that it was Dafka, it was precisely that opposition that allowed the Musar movement to become the vibrant movement that it was, and to continue till this very day. And so many of the yeshivas today, again, whether they realize it or not, are byproducts of the students and the students of the students of Rav Yisrael Salanter. Now I want to make one point very clear. When we talk about a new movement, we talk about now it's 1850 and Rav Yisrael Salanter is teaching this new outlook. It's not really anything new that's being taught to the world. Part of the hesitation of Yiddishkeit evolving in a proper way is that there's a fear that maybe it's going to be too new. Maybe it's going to move too far away from essential Torah values that the Jewish people have always lived by. I always think of the Gemara in Makos, at the end of Maseches Makos, and Daf Chav Gimel onto Daf Chav Dal, the last Daf of Maseches Makos, where the Gemara tells us there are 613 mitzvahs. 613 mitzvahs. And yet the Gemara says that at critical points of Jewish history, there were individuals, Nevi'im, kings, who came along and said, you know what, we're going to summarize the mitzvahs into just a few basic principles. David HaMelech comes along, and David HaMelech says, instead of having 613 mitzvos, let's have 11 mitzvos. Others come along and say, Yishayo, and Navi comes along, let's have 6 mitzvos. Micha comes along and says, 3 mitzvos, Baal Micha ve'amidon al shalosh. Yishayo comes once again and says, let's get it down to 2. Let's keep it simple. Until famously the Gemara says, Baal Habakkuk ve'amidon al achas. Habakkuk came along and said, I can sum up the whole Torah in one statement, v'tzadik be'monaso yechya. A tzadik lives by his faith. Says the Maharal of Prague, it's a very strange Gemara. Since when do we start to adjust the Torah to fit the times? 6:13 became 11, and then it became 6, and then it became 3, and then it became 2, and then it became 1. Right? Isn't this a great perversion of the authenticity and the truthfulness of Torah that certainly has the ability to last throughout the generations? And the Maharal of Prague explains that what these tzaddikim were doing, what they were recognizing, what courageous Jewish leaders who had an understanding of the Jewish soul and the spirit of the time were able to identify the key components to be able to unlock the 613 mitzvos. That's what David and Yeshayahu and Navi and Micha and Habakkuk, that's what these tzaddikim were doing. They were saying, of course, we're not compromising on the 613, but we need to help Klal Yisrael focus because they've lost some of their focus. And therefore, Habakkuk came along and said, "Betzadik be'emunaso yichya." Something is off with the recognition of what it means to be a faithful Jew, to believe in God, and because of that, everything else is crumbling. So Habakkuk wasn't coming to redefine the 613. He was coming to help us focus on achieving a certain sense of shleimus in our Avodas Hashem by highlighting the critical components of how one can come to 613. I'll just read you one line from the Maharal. The Maharal says that when the Gemara says Bad David va'amidan al yud aleph, David came to establish 11 principles. What's a lomer? Shegam be'elu yud aleph dvarim shleimus klali. Those 11 things could be used as a stepping stone to what? To achieve the all-encompassing fulfillment of Torah. Kamoshahu b'taryag mitzvos. The same way the 613 is a balanced menu of what the Jewish soul needs to survive, David Melech said these 11 principles need to be focused on in order to create healthy Jews in our times. And therefore the goal of the Musar movement, and one of the challenges of any emerging movement, is the fear and the concern that maybe this is not merely a stepping stone to 613 mitzvos. Maybe this is a new definition or a redefinition of what Torah itself is. And there were people who were frightened that Rabbi Saul Salanter was coming to replace the Torah that always was with new ideas. And it made people uncomfortable. And that's where the opposition emerged from. Rabbi Simcha Zisel of Kelm, who we'll talk about next week, God willing, one of the great students of Rabbi Saul Salanter, the altar of Kelm, said that the words of the Musar, of the Bali Musar, are meant to serve like microscopes. Because Chazal say things that are sometimes hard for us to understand. Our sages sometimes are so lofty, compared it to stars out in the universe, and it's impossible for us to fully grasp what it is that our sages want us to understand. Rav Simcha Zisel said that the Bali Musar came, the writings of the Musar movement, and the Sifrei Musar and the Bali Musar came to serve as microscopes to allow us to better understand Chazal. To be able to see those stars at a distance up close, to understand what does the Torah really want from us? What does Hashem really want from us? What did our sages who lived a long time ago, we need to see it under a new lens, under a new microscope. Not to do anything different in terms of practice, right, but to be able to redefine the focus. I want to share with you just one line that Rabbi Beryl Wine has in his section on the Musar movement. Is in his volume Triumph of Survival on page 193. He says that Musar was not merely piety, which is maybe one way to translate Musar. It was psychology, sociology, philosophy as well. Musar therefore lent a new dimension to all of the time-honored aspects of Judaism. It was to be tefillah with Musar, Torah with Musar, communal activity with Musar, tzedakah with Musar, domestic relations and family life with Musar, life itself with Musar. It wasn't trying to take away any of the time-honored values of the Jewish people. The goal was to just help us to be able to access those things, again with that microscope called Musar, to be able to see these things in a clear and vibrant way. And that was the godless of Rabbi Saul Salanter. That was the vision of Rabbi Saul Salanter in the early Bali Musar, to be able to recognize that the Jewish people had lost focus. I think the story that captures it best is the following. Rabbi Saul Salanter was once speaking about his Talmud, Rav Simcha Zisel of Kelm, Simcha Zisel Ziv. And he was saying what a great tzaddik he is, and what a refined human being he is. And there was another Rav who was present at the time and said, you know, Rav Simcha Zisel has tremendous potential. But unfortunately, he wastes much of that potential reading these Musar works. These works of ethics and character development. Can you imagine who Rav Simcha Zisel could be? What a gadol he could be. What a Torah giant he could be. If instead of wasting his time with all these ethical treatises, he would spend time immersing himself in Gemara and Rashi and Tosos and learning the Talmud in depth. Why is he wasting his time with all of these other works? And Rav Yisrael Salanter said, I will answer based on the halach and Shulchan Aruch. Halacha states in Shulchan Aruch, if a person has two loaves of bread before him, one is a bit bigger, but is incomplete. It's a large half of a challah. And one is a small roll, but it's shalim, it's complete. It's untouched. It hasn't been broken into two. Upon which one should you recite a bracha? Do you make a bracha on the one that's bigger? Or do you make a bracha on the one that's more whole? And the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is very clear. The halacha states that you make a bracha on the one that's shalim. Says Rav Yisrael Salanter, it's more important, you see from the halacha itself, it's more important to be shalim, to be wholesome, that all the parts of my life should fit together, that everything, the entire personality of man, the pieces of my life should be able to add up in a way that makes sense, as opposed to being a gadol, to be particularly great in a particular area, but to not be the whole thing. To be a broken person, where parts of my life don't add up, and the puzzle pieces don't snap together. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, I want to be very clear. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a gadol b'Torah in a classic learning sense. He was a gaon b'Torah. He was a genius in Torah. They tell a story that Rabbi Yisrael once came to a town as he was traveling around, and he was trying to encourage people to learn Musar and to develop themselves and to work on themselves in this way. And he came to town, and one of the things that Rabbi Yisrael would do to win favor with the locals was he would give a shir, not in Musar, he would give a shir in Gemara. So he presented Mari Makomos, a list of sources that he was planning to discuss in his lecture, and he hung it up on the door of the Beis Medrash, and he came back later that day, and he saw that someone, who obviously didn't care very much for Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, had switched the sources. Here he had prepared a well-organized shir, and all of a sudden someone comes, and they put together, they hung up on the door, a list of random sources, a Gemara here, a source there, a halacha this, right? Completely nonsensical list of sources. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter took the list off the door, the shir that he was supposed to give. He walked up to the shtender. He stood there for a few seconds and went on to present a brilliant shir, piecing together, lacing together all of those disparate sources, which seemingly had nothing to do with each other, into a brilliant and creative shir. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's student, Rav Naftali Amsterdam, said, "You think Rabbi Yisrael Salanter paused for a couple of seconds to gather his thoughts? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, in a second, can look at the sources and had a brilliant shir in his mind." That's how sharp he was. That's how wise he was. He paused for a few seconds because he was frightened of the thought of giving such an impressive shir that the ones with which the Maor Makomos are going to say, "He's a Baal Gaiva. He's a haughty person." He was afraid that it would be a lack of humility to give such a brilliant shir. So for 10 seconds he stood there wrestling, would it be proper to give such a brilliant shir? Right? Knowing that as a person of fine midos, it's going to look a little bit like I'm showing off to those troublemakers who had switched the sources. In the end, he decided it was worth it to give such an impressive shir, so that way he could then give over his true message, which was again the necessity of people studying Musar. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was certainly a gaon. He was a genius in Torah. He was absolutely a giant in a classic learning sense. But again, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, I'd rather be a tiny, wholesome challah than to be a big broken chal. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter taught people that your whole life has to fit together. It can't be that your mind is so developed and your character is so unrefined. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, very famously, "Nakelios baki b'shas." It's much easier for a person to immerse his head in the books, to spend a lifetime mastering shas, the entirety, 2,711 pages of Gemara. It's easier to master that, "Miletakein ezo mida," than to correct one crooked character flaw that needs to be fixed. In Rabbi Yisrael's world, it wasn't about being big. It wasn't about being smart. It was about being wholesome. It was about being an ish shalim, to be a complete person. Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler was a great-grandson of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And the Michta Me'eliyahu quotes from his great-grandfather an explanation of the following medrash. The medrash says that Chanoch, if we remember Chanoch from the beginning of Bereishis in Parakei, "Le'eshalei Chanoch es Elokim, ve'einenu, ki lakach oso Elokim." Chanoch was a giant of spirit who died prematurely. Again, it's a strange story exactly what became of Chanoch. It's an unusual pasuk in Bereishis Parakei. But there's a medrash that says that Chanoch, by profession, was a shoemaker. And the medrash says about Chanoch that Chanoch was such a spiritual giant that with every stitch he would make, in preparing and lacing together a pair of shoes, on every stitch he would recite Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Va'ed, and on each stitch he was Miyached Yichudim, he was uniting worlds, Yichud V'Kishur Kol HaOlamos. As he was stitching together the shoes, He was tying together the outer spheres. That's what it says in the Medrash. It's a very Kabbalistic idea. Chanoch was a very mysterious person. Explained to Rav Yisrael Salanter, as quoted by the Michtam Eliyahu, his great-grandson. Says Rav Yisrael Salanter, you know what it means when the Medrash says that Chanoch was miyachid yichudim, that he was tying things together in some very lofty way as he was stitching together those shoes. Rav Yisrael Salanter said, you know, those outer spheres, that's not our domain. Let's talk about our inner world. What does it mean that with every stitch, that every stitch was miyachid yichudim? What was the great spiritual heights that Chanoch was achieving with each stitch? Rav Yisrael Salanter said, you know what it means? Chanoch made nice shoes. Chanoch took pride in the shoes that he was making. And then with each stitch, he did it. He said, you know what? Someone's going to enjoy these shoes. And I have to make sure that these are a good pair of shoes, that they should be able to last throughout the winter. And every time he was hired for a job, he took pride in his work. He delivered the product on time. The product was of the highest quality. Says Rav Yisrael Salanter, that's also a big and holy thing. It's not only about what's happening out there. To be miyachid yichudim doesn't always have to take place. Again, in some intellectual capacity, right? In some otherworldly sphere. That when a Jew lives a life with shleimus, when everything that I'm involved in, I do to the best of my ability, that's also miyachid yichudim. That's also a very big thing. That's a very holy thing. Because it's a davar shalom. Rav Yisrael Salanter spent, over the course of his life, he was primarily in three Lithuanian towns. One large city in Lithuania, Memel, he spent a number of years. And when Rav Yisrael Salanter was in Memel, he used to daven, again, he was never the rav of a shul, he used to daven by a particular shul. And the shul had appointed a new chazan. The chazan knew that Rav Yisrael Salanter was a great person, and he wanted to ask Rav Yisrael Salanter's advice as a chazan. He asked him, what should my kavana be when I get up to daven? Rav Yisrael Salanter was certainly a person who knew how to have a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. I'm the chazan of a big kehila. I want to know, I'm being hired as a chazan. Tell me, what's the right kavana as the chazan of this shul, as the new chazan of the shul? So Rav Yisrael Salanter said to him, I'll tell you a very deep kavana. A very, very deep kavana. When you daven, you should make sure you pick nice tunes. You should make sure that you sing to the best of your ability. That people say you did a good job. La'asos malachtecha be'amuna. To do the job that you've been hired to do. That it shouldn't be that you're paid for a job and you fail to give it your all. To Rav Yisrael Salanter, that's the deepest kavanah in the world. More than any Kabbalistic names of God that one can meditate upon while he's davening. What it means to daven with kavanah means to do the best you can. To stand before Hashem with honesty, with integrity. To be an Adam Shalim. Rav Yisrael Salanter said, people say that the Maharal of Prague made a golem. A lot has been written about that. The Maharal of Prague probably did not make a golem. But people say the Maharal, there was a famous tale that was circulating around this time, right, that the Maharal of Prague created a golem, some type of mystical creature to defend the Jewish people at that time from pogroms and all sorts of attacks of the neighboring Gentiles. So Rav Yisrael Salanter said, to create a golem is a pelagadol. To create a golem, to be able to use Kabbalistic names of God again to create some type of, again, mystical creature, that's a wondrous thing. But he said, you know what's an even greater thing, a more wondrous thing? You know what's even more wondrous? To take a human being, a flesh and blood. To take the teva chomer hagashmi shala adam, a human being who has a tendency towards such lowly things, and to make him into a true mensch, to transform the dirt from which Adam Rishon was created, which each of us are created from, to be able to transform that into something holy, to become a real person, that's the greatest thing in the world. That's an even greater accomplishment. That was Rav Yisrael Salanter's worldview. To be an Adam Shalim is more important than to be a Gadol, again, in some otherworldly or some very lofty intellectual way. It's been discussed by many, a phrase that we incorporate into the end of Yom Kippur, an unusual phrase. And everyone from the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov to the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, Rav Soloveitchik has an insight on this. Everyone has a comment on this. A very strange phrase that appears in the Vidui at the end of Yom Kippur. After the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, we've worked and we've worked and we worked. We finally come to conclude the davening, the Eil of Yom Kippur. V'titein lanu Hashem Elokeinu ba'av es Yom HaKippurim hazeh, es Yom Slichas ha'avon hazeh, es Yom Mikra Kodesh hazeh, l'mechila, l'slicha, l'kapara. All this sounds correct. We've been saying that over the course of the entire day, of the Yom HaKadosh, of Yom HaKippurim. And then we say that the purpose of all is this, of all of this, the slicha, the mechila, the kapara that we're seeking, is l'man nechtal me'oshek yadeinu. To protect our hands from theft. That I shouldn't be a thief. It's a strange phrase. Theft? What did I steal? What are we afraid of? Why is that the concluding statement of the Vidoy of Yom Kippur? V'nashuv lasos chukei v'tzonecha b'leiv avshalim. I should be able to serve you b'leiv shalim. Hashem, please protect me that I don't steal a dollar, that I don't take something from someone that's not mine. Why is that the concluding line of the Avodas Yom Kippurim, the Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur? L'man nechta me'oshek yadenu. Again, many tzaddikim have explained, and many have explained in a similar fashion, that when a Jew fails to use anything that we've been given in the right way, that's theft. We just finished last week a series on the five senses. If I don't see and I don't hear and I don't taste and I don't touch, if I don't use my senses, my sensory experience of the world to serve Hashem, then I'm a thief. Then my eyes are stolen, my ears are stolen, my mouth is stolen. If I don't use my body to serve Hashem, then I'm a thief. If I don't use my mind for the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to use my mind, if I don't use my money, my resources, if I don't spend my money in the right way, then I'm a thief. Then I'm stealing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The underlying theme of every single mitzvah is to use the power that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you in the proper way. To stitch the shoes for the right reason. To daven the Shemoneh Esrei for the right reason. To use, again, our senses and our minds and our hearts and our bodies in the right way. And the Musar movement, Befrat, came to try to restore those sensitivities. That people were using their mind in the wrong way. And people were using the Torah in a way that Rabbi Saul Salanter felt was abusive. That people weren't taking achrayas for their actions. That people weren't trying to be precise and calculated in everything that they did. That they were satisfying themselves to be a gadol in certain areas, and that their lives would be entirely lacking in other areas. Rabbi Saul Salanter was a person who understood, a person who has to take achrayas. Everything that I have, every choice that I make, everything that I do, has to be precise, has to be calculated. There's responsibility as a human being who exists in this world that a person has to have. Probably one of the most famous accounts is the tale, again, true or not, but it's attributed to Rabbi Saul Salanter. That Rabbi Saul Salanter was walking home one evening and he was walking past a fellow's shop and he saw that there was a light on. And he poked his head and he saw a shoemaker sitting there late in the evening. And he said to him, "What are you still doing here? Why didn't you go home yet?" And the shoemaker points to the candle, whatever was left of his lamp, and he said to him, "Kol zman shehaner dolek," as long as the light is still burning, as long as there's a little more oil in the lamp, "od efshar lif'ol letakin," I can still work and I can still fix. And Rabbi Saul Salanter was so captivated that it became a mantra of his. That he spent the rest of the night, the Sfarim say, he spent the rest of the night reciting over and over again that statement from this shoemaker. "Kol zman shehaner dolek," as long as the candle is burning, there's more to do. The Muslim movement taught people you have to take achrayas for your actions. That every move that we make, every word that we say, has to be calculated. He felt such a deep achrayas for Klal Yisrael. One time Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, again he was a genius in Torah, he was learning one time with one of his Talmidim, and they came to a very difficult passage in the Rambam, and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter offered an unbelievably profound answer to a very complex passage of the Rambam. And after he answered this, resolved this quandary of the Rambam, he immediately fainted. And when they revived Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he said, "If I have such a mental capacity, if I have such a mind, if God has given me such an intellectual ability, so what right do I have to not be Makari of the whole world? I have so much energy, I have so much power, I have so much capability. How could it be? One day," he said, "I'm going to have to answer them. I'm going to have to come before God, and Hashem's going to say, 'You saw how smart you are. You saw how capable you are. Why didn't you bring the whole world back to me?'" He would say about himself, "I have the mind," and again, he was a humble person, but he knew who he was. "I have the mind, I have the brilliance of 1,000 people combined." But he would immediately say afterwards, "But that means I have the achrayas, the responsibility of 1,000 men combined. I have an obligation to the world. I have things that I need to accomplish." And Rabbi Saul Salanter lived with that deep sense of l'man nechta me'oshek yadenu, that I shouldn't, God forbid, steal anything at all. His sensitivity to theft, in every sense of the word, was remarkable. It's been noted that Rabbi Saul Salanter passed away on the week of Parshas Mishpatim. How fitting. Parshas Mishpatim, the sensitivity that a person has in his interactions with others, not to cause any damage, not to take something that doesn't belong to you. It's not by chance, the Sfarim say, that Rabbi Saul Salanter passed away the week of Parshas Mishpatim, because that was his life's message. To have sensitivity to others, to have sensitivity to other people's money, to have sensitivity to other people's time, to have sensitivity to other people's feelings. In the Ksav Yad, I saw in the Ksav Yad of Rav Simcha Zisal of Kelm, again the Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter, he said about his Rebbe, Ha'admor zal heyir einei hagola barov chikirosav yidiyosav. My Rebbe was the greatest master of dinei mamonos gezel v'nezikin. My Rebbe had a greater sensitivity to money, to damage, to theft. Asher mamish yachid hayu b'doros halal. He was one of a kind of the generation. His sensitivity to theft. What does that mean? He paid his taxes on time. But it means that Rabbi Sol Salanter, again, had such a sensitivity to people's comforts, people's time, people's feelings, people's possessions, their dignity, their very lives. A story is told in the Sefer Maoros HaGedolim that in Kovno, it used to be in every large city, there used to be a hektish. A hektish was a hostel where the poor people would go to find somewhere to sleep. It was a community center where people, unfortunately, didn't have a place to call home, could spend the night. And Rabbi Sol Salanter found out that the hektish, that this hostel in Kovno, was in terrible condition. The roof was caving in, and there was improper insulation, and the place was filthy, and the mattresses, whatever they called mattresses that were on the floor, were infested with lice and the like. And Rabbi Sol Salanter, being a person who had an unbelievable sensitivity to others, decided not to go around and collect money. He said, that's not going to work. People don't get it. He said, the local rabbis already tried to raise money. No one wants to put money into this old dilapidated building. So Rabbi Sol Salanter said, fine. Imo anochi b'tzara. And he picked himself up, and he went, and he sat down on the floor, in the middle of the hektish in Kovno, and he sat there for a few minutes, and the poor people were very honored to have Rabbi Sol Salanter as their guest. They figured he came to say Shalom Aleichem, to wish them luck, and to go on his way. And Rabbi Sol Salanter sat there. And he opened up his sfarim, and he started to learn. And he sat there, and he sat there, and it started to rain. And the rain started dripping in through the roof. And it was freezing. And it was windy. And he sat there. And the Talmidim said, Rebbe, Arkan, it's time to go. Rabbi Sol Salanter said, you're concerned about me, you're not concerned about everybody else. And he laid down to spend the night there. Needless to say, very quickly thereafter, right, the leadership in Kovno realized that they need to put a little bit of money into the hektish to fix it up. But Rabbi Sol Salanter was the epitome of Nosei Ba'olim Chaveiro. That it's not enough to just feel bad for someone, but to join them in their pain. Rabbi Rucham Levavitz, who was himself the great Mashgiach of Mir, one of the great Musar personalities of the next generations really, Rabbi Rucham writes in one of his Sfarim, in the Sefer Das Chochma Musar, he says, the concept of Nosei Ba'olim Chaveiro, to be able to carry the burden of someone else's pain, he compared it to a person who has a large debt. Imagine someone owes someone else $1,000. You owe someone $1,000. So the person who's owed $1,000 doesn't care if he gets the money from the one who borrowed the money, or if his friend wants to pay on his behalf. As long as he gets his $1,000, he's happy. So said Rabbi Rucham Levavitz, and he was commenting again on the story with Rabbi Sol Salanter, right? It's exactly the same idea. When you join someone in their pain, not just, oh, I feel bad for them. When you actually join them in their pain, you're helping to pay off their debts. Hashem, for whatever reason, has placed a burden upon this person. But when you join them in their suffering, that's making a donation. It's making a donation to their suffering. And hopefully it can resolve their difficulty more quickly. That was the sensitivity of Rabbi Sol Salanter. Laman nechta me'oshek yadenu. To think of others in the most trying of times. The story is told that Rabbi Sol Salanter was on his deathbed, and they had a rotation of people who were taking care of him in his final moments. And Rabbi Sol Salanter knew, and apparently people would speak at the time, there was a great fear in the town to be left alone with a dead body. That was something that many people at that time were frightened of. And Rabbi Sol Salanter realized that I might become the death body that Nebuch, this poor yeshiva bacher who's sitting by my side watching over me, is going to be left alone with. And Rabbi Sol Salanter, instead of spending the last moments of his life, having a private moment with God, doing tshuva, davening a final tefillah, thinking about himself, after giving his whole life to Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Sol Salanter spent the last moments of his life speaking to the young man who was sitting alongside him. You don't have to be frightened. There's nothing, this myth that people say being left alone with a dead body is a very scary thing. It's not true. Don't worry. Nothing's going to happen to you. You're going to be fine. Right? Telling him, generally speaking, there's nothing to worry about. And he understood shortly thereafter when Rabbi Sol himself passed away, he understood how Rabbi Sol was thinking that maybe he'll be left alone with my body. And he'll be frightened. And I don't want, God forbid, that even after I'm gone, God forbid, to cause any discomfort to another human being. Again, this was the life and the legacy of Rabbi Sol Salanter. One of the most famous stories It's told in the Sefer Making of a Gadol, which is a very fascinating work, that in 1848, on Yom Kippur, there was a terrible concern of a plague in the town, and Rabbi Saul Salanter felt that Pikuach Nefesh comes first, and he went from one shul to the next, encouraging people to eat on Yom Kippur. Now I told you, Rabbi Saul Salanter didn't hold a rabbinic post, he wasn't officially a posek, he wasn't the Av based in a Vilna, and yet he went around from shul to shul, telling people, I paskin that you have to eat on Yom Kippur. So he was summoned before the Beis Din in Vilna. And they said to him, what right do you have? Who are you? They knew who he was, but you're not a posik. You're not a local Rav. And they said to Rabbi Saul Salanter, listen, the bottom line is, you're a great person. So it was wrong what you did, and you need to be punished. But because you're such a great person, we'll let you pick your punishment. You can choose what you want your punishment to be. This is what the Beis Din of Vilna said to Rabbi Saul Salanter for encouraging people to eat on Yom Kippur, because he was literally trying to save lives. Rabbi Saul Salanter turned to them, and Rabbi Saul Salanter said, I have no hesitation about what I did. My greatest responsibility, my achrayus to the world, is to make sure that people stay safe. And it's a perversion, again, it's a perversion of godless and shlemus to think that one has to fast on Yom Kippur in the face of Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh is docha, everything in the Torah. And Rabbi Saul Salanter, again, to put the Beis Din of Vilna in their place, the story is told that Rabbi Saul Salanter said, if you dare try to punish me, I will discredit all of the gittin, all of the divorce documents that have been issued by this Beis Din for the last 50 years. Because I know that you write a get in accordance with the opinion of the Beis Shmuel, one of the commentaries alongside the Shulchan Aruch and Evan Ezer, and I can ask such a strong question on his approach to writing a get, that you won't be able to answer that all of the gittin that you've issued from this Beis Din in the last 50 years will be discredited. So he said, you have to realize who you're starting off with. And you have to realize why I issued my psak. I have to take care of people. That's my greatest responsibility in the world. Again, this was the life and the legacy of Rabbi Saul Salanter. So with just a few minutes that we have left, I'd like to learn together just the beginning of his famous Igaris HaMusar. Again, the famous Musar letter that he wrote in 1858. You'll see immediately the beautiful poetic language that Rabbi Saul Salanter wrote with. And I know this might be a little dishonest to our series, The Giants of Musar, but I want to just begin, for 2 seconds, by sharing with you a line from the writings of a very different Beis Medrash, from the Talmud of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, Rabbi Nassan, Zuchusi Yagen Aleinu, who wrote a magnificent work called Lekutei Halachos. And in the very first piece on Chanukah, he says that the whole avoda of Chanukah, the work of a Jew on Chanukah, is to do the following. Shetzarich kol adam lahosi es atzmo min amedam eshu koach habahamius sheim taivas kulam ulalos es hasecha. Writes Rabbi Nassan of Nemrov in his Lekutei Halachos, the first halacha in Chanukah, the role of a Jew on Chanukah is to extract himself from the world of dimyon, from the world of the destructive world of the imagination, of illusion, of that which is illusory, and to enter into a world of refined secha. The Avanim came, Timu Kol Hashmanim, to pervert our thinking, to corrupt our way of looking at things, and the Avoda of Chanukah is to restore the pure oil, to light the menorah, to illuminate our minds, to see things in an absolutely clear way, to conquer Dimyon, to conquer that which is imaginary, to conquer all of our taivos and our yetzaharas, which try to stop us from properly serving Hashem, by causing us to enter into all sorts of man-made constructs of the mind that prevent us from serving Hashem with honesty and sincerity. So understanding that that's the essence of Chanukah, just listen to the opening lines of Rabbi Saul Salanter's Igaris HaMusar. Ha'adam chafshi b'dimyono. Man is free. Hashem has allowed man to be free in his dimyon, in his imagination. Va'asur b'muskalo. And yet he is bound by his intellect. That means man spends his life grappling between the world that is and the world that he imagines could be. And one of the hardest things for a human being to do is to be able to be intellectually honest with himself. To be intellectually honest with himself in the way that Rabbi Saul Salanter wanted people to be intellectually honest with themselves. Not to be big in a certain area and very small in other areas, and to overcompensate by being a gadol, again, maybe in the Beis Medrash, but to being an unrefined person in so many other aspects of my life. Dimyono molicho shovev bederech lev ritzono. The intellect leads a person. The imagination leads a person to all sorts of unbridled mischiefness. To be shovev, right? Shuvu balim shovavim. To be a mischievous person. That the heart should do whatever it desires. Bal yechas mea osir havadai. Not to be concerned or frightened for the absolute future. Namely, esif kod Hashem es kol mifalav. that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come at the end of one's life, and one's going to have to give a reckoning and accounting for every single choice that he ever made. Ushvatim kashim yivaser. And he will be afflicted. He will be punished for the poor choices that he made. Bal yilacheid zar biglalo. No one else will be taken to task for the choices that you made. You see the sense of achrayus with which a person has to live his life. Hu levado yisa pri cheto. He alone will bear the fruits of his iniquity. He's going to have to answer for the choices he made. Echad hu osa ha'avera v'hananash. The one who did the avera is the one who will be punished. Marahi. And it's a very bitter reality that unfortunately too many people are ignoring and running away from. Baal yomar ha'adam, a person should not say, Zech oli v'asenu. This is my illness and I'll bear the brunt. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, if a person thinks that way, it's because we don't believe, we don't understand the responsibility that we have for ourselves and the choices that we make. Pigei ha'tevo mitzarim heima l'machbir mul onshe ha'averos. The punishment of the averos, again, it's the language of Musar, it's very heavy. The punishment that one is going to have to receive for his choices, for the averos that he did, are nothing compared to the small calamities of this world. Tigal nefesh ha'adam l'madai yom l'shana yechashev. A person will feel terribly distressed. And in the period of punishment, a day will feel like a year. Oy l'dimyon, concludes the Yisrael Salanter. Woe to the imagination. Woe to our illusion that allows us to lose ourselves, to become imbalanced people, to fall for the tricks of the Yetzirah. Oyev hara hazeh. Woe to this wicked enemy. And therefore, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, we need to fix. This was his famous Igaris HaMusar. We need to make better choices. We need to be more wholesome people who look at Judaism and see it in all of its broad strokes. And not, again, to become great in some areas and to be very shallow in other areas. Miyadeinu hu. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, it's within our hands, it's within our grasp. B'kocheinu l'archiko b'titeinu ozen kashevas ala seichel. We need to listen to our pure and refined intellect. Exactly what Rav Nosson is writing. That's what Hanukkah is about. To conquer dimyon and to elevate the seichel. Again, I can't hold myself back from just sharing it. You look at the word dimyon, you see a remarkable thing. Again, we're drifting from Musar into Chassidus now. But if you'll allow me for a moment. You look at the word dimyon, what do you see? You see, the word dimyon is made up of Dalet Mem in front of the word Yavan. Yavan is Greece, that's the enemy of Hanukkah. Dalet Mem corresponds, Dalet Mem's Gematria 44 corresponds to the 44 candles we light over the course of Hanukkah. Over the course of 8 nights plus the 8 shamashim that service the menorah, that allow us to benefit from the light of the menorah, the Svarim talk about 44 candles that we light. So we need to put the Dalet Mem, we need to put the 44 candles, again, that pure light, Kiner Mitzvah Torah Or, and everything that it represents, needs to come in front of Yavan. We can't allow that world of Yavan to deceive us into thinking that the man-made philosophies, which again is part of what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is fighting against, the Haskalah movement, we can't allow man-made philosophies to walk side by side with the wisdom of Torah. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, we need to elevate our seichel. Not again in a intellectual way for the sake of being smart. But again, to listen to our seichel in a deep way. La'askil al devar emes. To recognize this deep truth. La'chshov schar avera neged hafseida. To be mindful of the choices we make and that we're going to have to answer for them. Uma na'asen. How do we do this? Hadimyon nachel shoteif ha'seichel yitba. The dimyon is trying to flow over the whole world and to drown us. And the intellect fears being drowned. If we don't harness the intellect and put the intellect as the captain of the ship, he argashas hanefesh visaras haruach. If we don't allow ourselves to what? To meditate deeply on the hergish, to become emotional people who understand again the full spectrum of what it means to be a human being, and what it means to be a thoughtful person. He says here in the footnote that what Rabbi Salanter means here is what he writes in one of the other letters in Igaris Tess. La'archiv ha'rayon b'tziyurei chushi. To expand the intellect over all of our senses. La'or nefesh b'rikshas ha'ivarim. That every limb should be accounted for. That every part of the body should be calculated and used in a meaningful way. Limshoch b'kir v'advarim nodayim. To make sure that again we right the ship. That the ship that's upside down, that the mind that's drowning in dimyonos, again in falsified ideologies, the Rishon Salanter came to right the ship. And I'll conclude just with the Hakdama to the Sefer that I'm reading from, the Or Yisrael, which was put out by Rav Yitzchak Blaser, the Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter, in his Hakdama as he collected the writings of Rav Yisrael Salanter. And he explains why he felt it was so important to publish the Sefer. He says that many Bali Musar and early works compare this world to a raging ocean. And there's a ship. And the ship needs to be carefully guided through, again, through the raging seas of this world by a captain. Says Rav Yitzchak Blazer, the Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter, Kein adavar b'taluchos aniya ketana azos. The same way that the big ship on the water has to be so carefully steered to safely find its way through the waters, through the raging seas, so too this little ship called man needs to be steered in the right direction. And says Rav Yitzchak Blazer about his Rebbe Rav Yisrael Salanter, Hine admor hagon achosid, my Rebbe Rav Yisrael Salanter, hu kerav hachovel. He is the captain of the ship. He was the one who came to set Klal Yisrael back on the right path. That there shouldn't be this imbalance. That again, we live in these dimyonos, where we overcompensate in some areas, and we're very shallow in other areas. That it has to be a balance. That the seichel has to rise up once again, and take control. Again, the seichel channeling itself outward to all of the body parts, to be able to serve Hashem in the right way. So Mirtzei Hashem, again, it's a tiny, tiny sliver of the entire life of a giant. Who again, whose impact from the mid-1800s is still resonating in the world today. But Amir Tzashem, halavai. Halavai, as we enter into Hanukkah, this Motzei Shabbos, again, we should be able to conquer that world of Dimyon, to elevate our Seichel, to expand it into all of our senses, and halavai, halavai, we should live a life to have the sensitivities, and the care, and the concern, and the compassion, and the wholesomeness of Hagon HaChassid, Rav Yisrael Salanter.